write my song when something special comes along. It's a long-winded directionless discussion for conversationalists.
You bring the wit.
You bring the brains and we'll talk it over between takes.
Welcome back to Between Takes with Opal Entertainment. I am Aiden Driscoll.
And I'm Olivia O'Neill.
And today we have the pleasure of being joined by the bassist of Colony House and the producer of our latest single, The Sullen Man, Mr. Park Cottrell.
He will be talking to us a bit about his musical inspirations and how he got started in music.
So please sit back and enjoy this week's episode of
Between Takes.
Welcome to season four of Between Takes, ladies and gentlemen. Liv, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
You're my co-host, but I feel like I should welcome you for some reason.
Thank you for welcoming me. You're feel welcome.
Yes, this is very, very fun. Before we get into the discussion with Park Cottrell that we recorded a couple months back, we want to give you a couple of very, very brief updates on where the show is at. Mm-hmm. You'll be getting an episode, well, first update, I guess, we're going to be releasing these bi-weekly rather than weekly. So you'll be getting a longer episode, or you will be getting another episode. See, it's been a minute.
Yeah.
Where we will be giving a more in-depth explanation of kind of where we're at and what the plans are. But basically, we're going to be releasing bi-weekly the episodes. And was that the only thing? Is that the only thing they need to know right now? We just put out a song, The Sullen Man.
I'm trying to think.
Did you want to talk at all?
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Bi-weekly, new song. We'll be talking to guests over the seasons, and we'll like Aiden said, in 2 weeks' time, full length episode will come out of us two kind of talking about what we've been up to, inspirations, kind of what our plans are for the season to come.
Right.
So that will be the biggest. That will be like a very informational episode. But this week is a very fun episode because we talk to producer, musician, friend, Park Cottrell.
Yeah.
This really guy, cool guy.
It was super awesome. Just we haven't really talked about this a ton, but we have had these, we produced both The Sullen Man and Someone to Talk To with him. And both of those songs are like very central to this next project that we're working on. And we've had both of those for a while. So when we went into the studio, I was all like, we have to be super perfect and all that. And he was too. I mean, he was taking it very seriously. But it was mostly like I went in, recorded guitar, and you recorded bass, and we both sang. And then he basically did everything else and made it sound awesome. Yeah. And we offered a few ideas. There was this one part, just really quick, specific thing. At the on the first pre-chorus of The Sullen Man, when I sing The Gentleman of Gloom and Doom, Disguise and Dignity, and you hear the electric guitar come in with this dum 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 dum, that part. Mm-hmm. I was thinking in my head, it'd be kind of cool if we had like some pizzicato, like arpeggiated chords from the electric guitar on the pre-chorus.
Yeah.
And that was like the first day we recorded with him. And I didn't say it out loud until we got in the car and we're driving back here. And then the next day we show up and he literally like had that.
It's so
and he
crazy.
Was like working it out. And he like was like, that was a compliment to my brain because it was like me and like one of my favorite musicians think the same in this way.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a ton of fun to work with him on these songs. But here's a conversation we recorded with him a couple months back while he was on tour. And we're basically just learning about him, hearing his story, and sharing that with you all. Super awesome. Obviously, if you don't know Colony House, of which he's a part of, check it out. Also, check out Brother Studios here in Nashville if you're a musician. It's a ton of fun to work with, and it's a super awesome environment to record in. Liv, do you have anything else you want to say before we hear
from Park? No, let's go to that combo.
All right, past Aiden and Liv, let's talk to Park. Awesome.
Cool.
Can you see us?
I can see you.
Oh, okay. Do we look okay? Is our hair fine?
You guys look great. I love seeing all the ukuleles and stuff on the back wall.
We got 1,000 ukuleles on our back wall. Yeah,
I absolutely love it.
Ton of fun. Where are you guys right now?
We played, I guess, we'll call it night one was last night in St. Louis, and tonight we're in Indianapolis.
Sweet.
And it's cold, guys. It's very cold.
I'm sorry.
No, it's all good. It's all good.
February in the Midwest isn't necessarily the same as February in Tennessee, which I'm sure you've been around. So
you are correct in saying that. How are you guys?
We're good.
Good.
Yeah. We are super. I'm still riding the high from last week's show. So that was so much fun. That was so cool. You guys did so good.
Yeah.
Thank you. We had such a fun time. It was just a blast.
Had you been on that stage before, or is this just your first time headlining, or is this your first time at all in the Ryman Auditorium performing?
We've been in there a few times. We opened for Switchfoot as well as, I want to say, Mute Math. And then we did a couple events with their dad called like Sam's Place that he hosted. I don't know if he's still doing it. So we've been on that stage before, but that was our first time headlining, and it was pretty. I mean, it feels cliche to use a term like euphoric, but I mean, it was pretty special.
It was so cool.
I feel like that came across, and everyone was just going crazy everywhere.
Yeah, so. I think the whole crowd was having a great time with you. It was so cool.
I love that. I love that.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Cool.
So today we're just kind of doing a bit more of a kind of an open-ended, just getting to know Park type of conversation. So you just want to kind of tell us who you are and just a brief backstory of how you got to where you are and everything like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, hello, my name is Park Cottrell. I'm a bass player in Colony House. I produce music. I just like making music a lot with anyone and everyone that I can. Grew up in Knoxville, Tennessee. Moved to Nashville in 2010. Was a hired gun for several years. And then just by way of... Well, I was actually doing a solo project of like on my own and ended up getting connected with the Colony House dudes before they were called Colony House. They were called Caleb, the band. And I opened up one show for them. We became buds, ended up going on the road with them, opening for like a couple weeks on a tour that was connected to a couple of dudes' parents' organization called Show Hope. They did this tour to different like college campuses. Did that, and then fast forward a couple of years, they were needing someone to fill in on bass, and they were stupid enough to ask me to try to do that. And I just kind of I stuck around. So been and like officially joined in like 2016 or something like that.
Oh, really?
Or 17. Yeah, so I like end of 2014, I finished a tour out with them because their other bass player was getting married. And so then after I finished that tour, they were like, hey, maybe stick around. And I was like, I had to miss one tour because I was committed to another tour with a different artist. And then, but after that, 2015 was just, I was the guy. And then I guess it was surrounding the release of our second record, Only the Lonely, is when, somewhere in there is when I actually officially joined. So I guess maybe that would have been more like 2017. But... Whatever. And then just been doing that since. And then over the pandemic, I started just remotely producing songs for people and, you know, tracking instruments remotely. And then I was like, for the first half of the year, I was doing that quite a bit. And then I was like, hang on a second. Maybe my dream of building a studio on my property is actually closer than I thought. Aww. And so with a close friend who works in construction, he came over. I bugged him so many times. I was like, Thomas, do you think that I can turn this rickety old shed in my backyard into a studio? And he kept kind of being noncommittally saying stuff. He pretty much was saying no without saying no. Yeah. And then one day I was like, come over to my house, look me in the eye and tell me that we can't turn this into a studio. And he was, we walked around it and looked at it and he was like, I think we could do this. So, and then we, you know, me and my brother-in-law, Andrew Smith, who's in a dope band called Gold Park. Me and him did like a ton of unskilled labor, all the really not fun stuff. Like, I mean, the shed was a rickety old shed, mind you. And so we had like, first things first, you know, we cleared it out. And then it was like, well, we got to like kill any mold that might be in here. So we didn't really have hazmat suits, but we put on some masks and we just sprayed the entire thing down with bleach. I don't recommend doing that unless you do have a hazmat suit, because we were feeling the burn. But we did that, and then removed a ton of brush. Anyway, going into too much detail about that, but we ended up building the studio, and have since, you know, when time permits, been able to work with bands and artists like yourselves, and it's a blast.
Yeah.
So we not we, I, have just really enjoyed the ability and just having the space to be able to record music in, I mean, y'all know, it's a small space, but you can get a lot of cool stuff done in there. And it feels really cool to finally have that on my property. And now here I am back on the road with the band and just feeling energized because it's been almost a year and a half since we've been on the road. And so it just kind of feels like we're back.
Yeah.
Is that what that was one of our questions is like, what is your favorite part of the music making process? Is the road the final, like, okay, now this is like real music they're bringing in front of people? Or do you like the studio? Do you like the writing process? What's the highlight of music for you?
Short answer would be, I think maybe writing and recording is my favorite part. However, so we historically tour way too much. We've always just been hustle. And it's like, mm-hmm. if there's a good opportunity and it puts us on the road, puts us in front of new faces, it's difficult for us to say no. Mm-hmm. However, granted, all of last year we were making this new album and we made it out in Oklahoma. So we were still gone a lot last year, right. just for doing that. When appropriately spaced out, every single part of the process is amazing. So, like, we had ample time to make the record. We had a blast. I mean, it took a long time, so we were kind of exhausted by the end of it. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of reminiscent of how touring is as well.
Sure.
And so the space between touring, making the album, and then, like, you know, press stuff as well, and writing before even recording, like when it's all got its time and space, every single part is equally enjoyable. It's when it's like, okay, guys, let me think about this. 2015 and 2016, I think we did three total national tours in both of those years, plus throw in like college dates and some private events. Mm-hmm. Like we were pushing 200 plus shows a year and it might have even been for more, like it might have been through 2017 as well. So like kind of 3 years of just grinding. Mm-hmm. And so by the end of that, it was like, okay, we need to give ourselves a break, especially, and now we all have kids too. So it's like, we're constantly trying to innovate the way that we have done things. And now asking the question, do we have to do it the same way? No. And in fact, why don't we build it to be a little bit more manageable? Easier said than done, I will say. But that's kind of our sights are for getting more time at home and making the time that we're gone, whether we're traveling for studio like recording or touring, just trying to be more like smart about it. So anyway.
Yeah. What have you, so are you guys completely independent or do you have a label? Do you have a team working with you? It's not just the four of you doing everything, is it?
So we've got our manager, we've got a distribution company, we've got a booking agent, we've got business managers, but we do not have a label. We technically started our own label. Let me think about this. 2 or 3 years ago.
I didn't know that. That's
cool. It's cool, but it's also like, it's one of those things where it's on paper, it looks cool, but then when you start this, well, it's more like, so what does that mean? And I couldn't really tell you what it means exactly. More just that we have an entity that if ever we wanted to do label things, we technically could. Granted, we're not really there. We like having our own label to exist underneath.
Sure.
So we've only ever so the first record when I was younger, we were signed to a subsidiary of Provident called Descendant Records. And then with our second record, our old A&R at Descendant had some connections and we got upstreamed to RCA. So the whole The Lonely Cycle, we were signed to RCA and it was cool and totally different. And I can't say stereotypical because we had a lot of good and bad experiences that maybe don't meet the typical
Sure.
However you want to word that. But it was just for that 1 year, and then we were no longer on the label, and it was fine. And since we've been independent, and it's really fun being independent, because we can do whatever we want to. It's only in the, like, you know, label deals. So our tour mates, Little Image, they're opening this tour.
Yeah.
They got a record deal, last year, and, you know, it's funny, like, just hearing conversations about the woes of independent life from our end and the woes of label life from their end, and the upsides and downsides. Like, there's the grass can be green in so many different ways. But I think we're still enjoying kind of our situation at this point.
Well, it's interesting how, like, nowadays it really just doesn't matter. Like, there's just a lot of people doing so many different things.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it used to be like you just needed the record deal and then you were, or whatever. Like, that was the mindset. But now I feel like a lot more independence.
So. Yeah. And there's,
absolutely.
It's with independence, I think there's that what could be your greatest weakness can be turned into your greatest strength of, like, everyone else is out there, right? But then because of that, like you just said, you can do anything and you're playing to this. I mean, it can also be small fish in big pond type thing, but also I think you can really hone in on what makes you unique and what makes you stand out. And I think you guys have totally done that and are continuing to do that, to find the uniqueness within within the band and people. Obviously, you know, you sold out the Ryman. People are willing to invest in that unique sound that you guys are exploring. I think that's really awesome.
Oh yeah, that's a really cool way to put that. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for saying that.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Well, that's it. I just complimented you, so
I appreciate that.
We're basically even now.
You're very good at complimenting.
Yes. Everyone keeps saying that about me.
We have that happen.
You are. You're a very
podcast.
Encouraging feller.
Yes, that's me. I'm an encouraging feller. What is it about? Like, go back however long ago. What got you into music? What made you go? Whether it was I want to do that as a career or just I'm not going to put this down, what was it? And just kind of the more, I don't know, spiritual, emotional side of music that drew you in.
Yeah, it pretty feels pretty classic. So I've got two older brothers. My mom taught me and my brothers piano, and we each started when we were 5 years old. Mother's an amazing pianist still to this day. She's the kind of pianist that can, you just put sheet music in front of her and she can play it, which baffles my mind. I learned a few years into learning piano, like, that's not, I can't do that. It takes me forever to learn sheet music in that way, but I've got a really good ear. And when I started realizing that I had a good ear and that I could just pick out, you know, let's say I'm playing a video game and I'm like, oh, I think I know how to play that just by listening to it. And then I would sit at the piano and make it happen. And that's when I started to realize, like, okay, definitely have a knack for this. Definitely enjoy this. Middle school, I ended up, like, writing, like, super short songs for a ton of my friends. Like, 45-second to minute-long little instrumental songs. And at one point, and I would play them all the time because I didn't have anything to record them with. So that's how I remembered them. Just constantly play them.
Yeah.
And I had like 40 songs that I was, playing, like that I had written for my friends. And I remember being like, this is cool. I enjoy this. towards the end of middle school, beginning of high school, I kind of like, I don't know why, but I just wasn't playing much piano. And my parents, Lord love them, were like, well, hey, maybe you want to play a different instrument. They definitely saw it in me that I that there was, you know, music was, something was going on. And so my dad bought me a mandolin, because he knew because he knew that I didn't like guitars or guitar players, and here's why.
I'm right here.
So I was super active in the high school youth group at my church. That's where all my friends were. And I would go to all, like, if there was a summer camp, I was there. If there was a fall camp, I was there. If there was any kind of, like, activity, fun, get-together, I was there. And at all these freaking summer camps, there was always that one dude, playing guitar, and it didn't matter if he sucked.
Yeah.
But girls,
50
just
people gathered around.
Yes, and the girls were just swooning. And I remember I'd walk by. Mind you, this was during my like piano days. So like I would walk by this moron playing guitar, and I would think to myself, like, you're if only these girls could see me sit at a grand piano, that's when I would change their minds. So anyway, my dad bought me a mandolin knowing I didn't want a guitar.
Right. And that's a real chick magnet.
Totally. Yeah. My dad definitely thought that one through. Thanks, yeah. Steve. I love Steve, by the way. Got a mandolin, played it. It was pretty easy for me to pick up. I enjoyed it. And then I've got to a point where I was like, I kind of wish this was bigger. And I kind of wish, oh no, am I wanting a guitar? Mm. And so he literally exchanged the mandolin for just a beginner guitar. And it was pretty immediate. Just like, I was in love. Just literally could not get enough of playing guitar. So then started writing songs on that. And all throughout high school, specifically freshman and sophomore year, some of my classes were a joke, and I would finish the work in like 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And this one semester, or this one whole year, my first two classes were right across the hall from each other. And in the second period class, a friend of mine left his guitar in one of the closets. So for the first two periods, pretty much for the first 3 hours of my school day, I was just playing guitar. Mm. And then I'd come home and I would play as much as I could until dinner. And it always felt like I was playing for like 20 minutes. And mom was like, you've been playing guitar for 3 hours. Wow. Come down here and eat some freaking food.
Yeah.
But that was just kind of like everything. For me, and you know, was in and out of like bands with my friends and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. I always knew that I wanted more than anything to be in a band that one day could be my job. And so I kept writing songs. I started my own like band, out of college, and we toured very little. I was a part of that band until, like, I'd moved to Nashville 2010, and, like, a few months after moving, we, like, called it quits. Mm-hmm. Then I started a solo project. That's when I met the dudes. And then I stopped the solo project and was a hired gun. And then it was fast track once I hopped on board for the last 2 weeks of that when I was younger tour. I was like, oh, yeah, this, I like this. And it's funny, too, because notice that I said that I loved playing guitar.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, how did that evolve?
It did evolve, didn't it? The year leading up to the guys asking me, I was getting probably once every couple months, I was getting like asked to play bass at like church services and stuff. And I was always like, I mean, you don't have to be a bass player to be able to play bass at church.
Sure.
Because it's very basic. At least the churches I was playing at. Right. Now, definitely not true for some other churches. Like gospel bass players, I have no idea how they play like that, but I can't do it. Anyway, every time that I would get asked to play bass, I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll play. But I kept like squinching my eyes and being like, what? Bass? Why? Who is telling these people that I play bass?
Right.
And then when Scott called and was like, hey, you want to fill in bass these last 2 weeks? I was like, I mean, yeah, but you know that I'm going to have to borrow a lot of equipment. I don't even own a bass.
Mm-hmm.
I borrowed my roommate's bass. I borrowed the pedal board from the previous bass player. Pedal board from our old front of house engineer. Borrowed the amp from the previous bass player. And that was my rig on that tour. And it was, you know, I definitely had questions because I've had this side project band for a while where I sing and play guitar and write most of the songs.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoy that. But I realized somewhere in between ending my solo project and touring as a hired gun where I kind of started to get the sensation and the realization, you know, the time I've spent, you know, at that point it was probably 5 years or so in grand total time between the band and then solo project of like really pursuing a career where it was like, you know, about me being the man, the front man, whatever.
Sure, yeah.
And I kept finding myself being not just disappointed, but like not fulfilled at all. Mm. And when I would tour with my friends and other artists, supporting them, playing, you know, guitar, keys, whatever it is, I felt really fulfilled. And so I started to realize, like, okay, maybe that's like, I should pay attention to that. And can confirm, it's wonderful. I absolutely couldn't think of not being in Colony House and not being a bass player. And now this year I'm just totally owning the fact that I am a bass player. I play other instruments, but I am the bass player in Colony House. There was definitely moments along the way where I was like, I mean, I like this, but I kind of wanted to be the guitar player and singer in the band. Mm-hmm. But I never went, like, in rehearsals and, like, shows and stuff with Colony House. I never felt that way. I was never like, I want to be Caleb. Never in a million years did that, like, cross my mind. So more just like a product of circumstance, just this is absolutely where I find myself, and it is the right place to be.
That's really cool.
When you were talking about, like, not feeling, like, disappointed and not feeling fulfilled, that was more of an internal, well, let me ask it this way. Was it like, oh, I'm disappointed because I played to no one and it wasn't a great show or whatever, or was it disappointed and unfulfilled for more what you were just saying, like you didn't feel like you were supporting anything?
Oh, for my solo stuff?
Yeah, yeah.
It's tough to put my finger on it, if I'm being honest, because I just...
Let's just dig up some trauma from a while ago.
No, I can remember I was opening up for my best friends, a husband and wife duo called Elle and Owen. We were playing at the Hamilton, a dope venue in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. And it was an amazing tour because I was opening up for and playing with them. And it was kind of a perfect scenario. But after like the first two songs of my set, I looked down at the set list and I was just like, I cannot wait to be done playing my songs. And I can't wait to play with them. That was kind of the light bulb moment of like, the switch is like officially kind of happened.
Interesting.
There wasn't like this... I never went through a period of like, oh, that's not true. There was a time after that where I was like, wow, this is a bummer. Like this thing that I thought that I wanted for a long time, this thing that I did want for a long time, now I no longer want, and therefore I can be bummed about that. Mm-hmm. But I also kind of immediately see this clear vision of, but supporting artists. That is where my fulfillment comes. And there is something really special about... there's something really special about, it's not even the immediacy of it, but just being like, when you get a clarity moment of, even though that thing over there was nice, bright and shiny, and I liked it, there's this upgraded, better thing right here, and kind of the, as the scales tip, like I said, it's good to grieve. It didn't take long for me to grieve. It was because I had something really special just like right here. Maybe that's a convoluted way to answer your question.
No, that makes sense. Yeah, cool. That makes sense. That's really cool. Well, we'll let you go because we know you got things to do. If I can just ask one more question.
Yeah, for sure.
What is the, in all year, you've been a part of many, many, many musical endeavors. And we know a lot of people who've like started a bunch of different projects and like we've been a part of a lot of different projects and all that. What is the, for those types of people, how do I
don't know.
Sorry, I'm trying, part of me is
this
like,
is good, this is good, you'll get there, you'll
directions.
Get there.
Yeah. I guess just like what are the biggest things that you've learned that are like tent pole principles and pieces of advice that have stuck with you over all these years and like led you to not like to success, but like that feeling excited, feeling enthused to show up at the studio with Colony House, to show up on tour, to start your own studio, to be a producer and all that. What has been the most like consistent tentpole throughout all that, or a couple or whatever it is?
Yeah. I mean, the things that come to mind are, number one, there's a lot of people trying to do this. So you gotta know for yourself if it's not just something that you want to do, but that you can't live without. Meaning, like I point back to, you know, those years of playing guitar 6 hours a day because I literally couldn't get enough of it. And sure. I find that to be a thread woven through my entire life. No matter if I'm producing an artist, writing songs for Colony House, writing songs for my side projects, doing goofy projects, like whatever it is with music, guys, I literally can't get enough. And for me, I think that like you kind of have to have this insatiable desire for the craft. I think that's one thing. I think two, like there's got to be a conviction of your, like what it is that you're trying to communicate. Like you have a purpose for your art. What is it? Define it. And, because I think there's a lot of people that happenstantially love creating art, are good at creating art, but there's no real end goal in sight or there's no real like overarching purpose. And I think purpose-driven art is absolutely the art that connects most with people. And I mean, that just takes time to figure that out. And so like taking risks, like just try stuff. Funny story, I tear up every time I watch the movie Zootopia because that stinking Shakira song, Try Everything, like the sentiment that I just, that strikes me from that song every single time is the whole like, if you fail, great, get back up and try again. And another animated movie that just makes me weep, Meet the Robinsons, that same sentiment is kind of, you know, the overarching theme where it's like, you failed. Yes, that means you get to try again. Like for artists and creatives and musicians, like you have to, like I'm someone that can easily be a victim of, I start writing a song and I start immediately critiquing it before I even finish it. Sure, and then I'll let that like hamstring me to not even finish it. That is the enemy.
Yeah.
Finish the song. If it's crappy, cool. You wrote a crappy song that probably will get stuck in somebody's head. Write more songs. I mean, it's just like, you just gotta go, hammer it all out. I have one more thought and it's escaping me. I think just maybe like, surrounding yourself with good people that support you, is pretty massive. The benefit of being in a band is that it's not a one man show. Like we lean on each other's strengths so that our weaknesses don't get brushed over, they just get built up.
Right.
And whether you're trying to start a band or in a band or whatever it is, the support system is pretty crucial. And longevity, you never know longevity of something until, you know, you take the first step and then you learn so much about, okay, I don't want to do that again, but I definitely want to keep going. And just day by day, it's definitely a very particular kind of grind, but
Well, I think you guys, again, just not to keep complimenting you guys, but I definitely like watching you guys last night. I was thinking, take Will out of this band. Like you're still a good band, but it doesn't have that same, that pizzazz, that unspeakable essence of take Park, take any one of you out of the band. It loses something.
Yeah.
And by the same merit, I think I know you guys have toured in the past. Haven't you toured in the past with a fifth member?
Oh yeah. Our friend Tyler Ham, who's also known as Tasty. He played keys on 1.5 tours. The half being the one that got cut short of, because of the pandemic. Yeah. But yes.
So that's something where it's like you can add all you want. That's also great. But I just think like there's something you found the bare minimum with Colony House now. And I think, and you've had that for years. I mean, I hope I'm not saying anything new. I hope you've heard this before, but, I think that's something, and that's something Liv and I have definitely found with working together is like, because I can very easily by myself go, oh, never mind, I'm just not even going to finish it.
Right.
Whereas
right.
like if I say it out loud, I might immediately go, oh no, that's stupid. But someone else might catch it and go, yeah, but, and then change it or whatever and go, no, that actually led to this awesome thing that we created together.
Totally.
And also learning to just write the song and spend time with it and know what it means before putting it out. Because I think sometimes I don't see the worth of something until I get the feedback from, and that can be good in some ways of just like, you want to play to your audience, but also knowing what does this mean to you before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. Do you have top five favorite albums off the top of your head?
Wow, not just off the top of my head. All right. Let me think about this for a split second. I mean, I can tell you some albums that I listen to pretty constantly. Aqualung's Memory Man album, Foo Fighters One by One. Used to be Ben Folds' Rock in the Suburbs. That's an incredible album. I'll throw that in there. Coldplay, Rush of Blood to the Head. Mm-hmm. And let's cap it off with the original soundtrack to Final Fantasy VII, the video game.
I feel like I've heard a lot of interviews where you mentioned Final Fantasy VII.
That's the video. I don't know why I didn't say this earlier. That video game is the reason. That's what got me into writing music. Mm. I was always like, that was what jump-started me writing songs on the piano for my friends in middle school. That was literally Nobuo Uematsu, the guy who composed, I want to say, upwards of like 1,000 songs in total for 10 plus video games. Wow. And others, not just the Final Fantasy franchise, but mainly that one. I mean, I watched, before I was able to play the game myself, I watched my oldest brother play through the game. So when it was my turn to play, I was familiar enough with the story that I was able to appreciate the music. And it was just incredibly rich compositions. And I remember being like, this guy freaking wrote this many songs? Surely I can write a few.
Right, right.
And so that was the thing that gave me permission to just start trying.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
So awesome. All right, well, thanks a ton for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
We really appreciate you taking time out of your tour schedule.
Thanks for having me on this podcast. This is fun.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, thanks a ton again, and hopefully we'll see you soon, whether on the road or off it.
Sounds like a plan, guys.
All right, we'll see you around. Thanks a ton. Between takes.